The headlines at this hour. The U.S. government says the oil giant BP chief executive will be replaced over the Gulf of Mexico slick. Iran says it's ready for technical talks on swapping its low-enriched uranium for nuclear fuel. And another U.S. drone strike on Pakistan's tribal areas. Several people die in the attack.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital of Tehran. You're watching another bulletin of world news on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. The chief executive of British oil giant BP is reportedly set to step down more than 3 months after the oil spill crisis in the Gulf of Mexico. A senior U.S. government official says the announcement of Tony Hayward's departure could come as early as Monday. He could likely be replaced by BP managing director Bob Dudley, who's overseeing the company's spill response. BP spokesman Toby Odohn has downplayed reports on Hayward's departure. Upon his departure, Hayward will reportedly receive a pay and pension package worth more than $18 million. Hayward became infamous in the aftermath of the spill for a series of gaffes, including going on a yacht race while the oil well was still not capped. The BP well ruptured back in April, spilling millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf. It has since been capped.
In Turkey, demonstrators have protested for a second day against an Israeli team playing in a volleyball tournament there. Now, protesters gathered near a sports hall in Ankara waving Turkish flags and as well as Palestinian flags. The demonstrators tried to force their way through a security barricade towards the sports hall but were pushed back by police. Turkey has been the scene of angry anti-Israeli protests in recent months.
Well, Turkish police have arrested the suspected mastermind behind an alleged 2003 military coup plan to overthrow the government. Retired four-star general Çetin Doğan was among nearly 200 people indicted on charges of conspiracy to launch the coup. Istanbul court issued an arrest warrant for more than 100 of the indicted. They include five serving generals and two admirals, as well as a number of retired ones. The suspects are charged with planning to bomb mosques and provoke tensions with Greece in an attempt to seize the power. Turkey's army has toppled four governments since 1960.
Well, Turkey and Brazil's foreign ministers say they still believe in the nuclear fuel swap declaration they signed with Iran in May. The comments were made in Istanbul as Iranian, Brazilian and Turkish foreign ministers met for an informal luncheon. A word of caution here for our viewers, though, the following report contains images of flash photography.
Turkish, Brazilian and Iranian foreign ministers have met for informal talks in Istanbul. This was the first ministerial level meeting since the tripartite Tehran declaration was signed in May, with the aim of building confidence between Western powers and Iran over its nuclear program. The meetings are to send a clear message to all concerned parties that diplomatic efforts will continue. Under the terms of the Tehran declaration, Iran would transfer 1,200 kilograms of low-enriched uranium to Turkey and receive 120 kilograms of 20% enriched uranium for use in a medical research reactor within 1 year. The deal was announced just 1 week before US-led sanctions at the Security Council were adopted, which resulted in political deadlock on how to move forward.
We thought the Tehran agreement, which was precisely, not more or less, precisely what was asked to us by some of the Western countries, including in writing, as you mentioned, that these would be a gateway for discussing broader issues.
Turkey and Brazil, both non-permanent members of the UN Security Council, voted against sanctions after the US actively encouraged them to push for the deal, but were not, however, given enough time to fulfill the technical part of the agreement.
The first obligation of Iran, in accordance with the Tehran declaration, was to write a letter to the Atomic Agency in Vienna in 7 days, which they did, precisely in 7 days. There were comments on this letter by the so-called Vienna group. But even supposing that Iran had accepted all the comments and all the conditions, they would not even have time to have any consequence.
Jody Sabral from Press TV. What are you expecting next from the U.S. president?
We have always encouraged Iran to take a flexible position because I think that's also in their interest. But of course, it is also important that other countries respond accordingly.
This is only a confidence-building measure. Now it's up to Iran and the Vienna group to start technical discussions.
Speaking ahead of the meeting with the Iranian Foreign Minister Manoucher Mitaki, Davutoğlu and Omarin said they believed a diplomatic solution to the standoff could be reached. Jody Sabral, Press TV, Istanbul.
In a press conference after the trilateral talks, Iran's foreign minister said Tehran is ready for technical talks on swapping low-enriched uranium for nuclear fuel. Our correspondent has more.
There have been some significantly positive developments now, it seems, that all parties are ready to move forward with the Tehran declaration. Of course, there had been a lot of confusion over whether Iran was ready to move forward after we'd heard reports in the media that talks wouldn't happen until after Ramadan. However, the Iranian foreign minister, Mr. Mutaki, has just clarified for us in a press conference that this is, in fact, the P5+1 talks with Iran. But the talks with the Vienna group that include Turkey and Brazil are a completely separate track. And this, of course, envisions the fuel swap that I mentioned in the report there. So according to this Tehran declaration, Iran was to follow a process, which Mitaki said they did. Mr. Mitaki also just said, and I quote, "We could then start technical talks immediately," meaning before Ramadan. Tomorrow, Iran is going to send its second response to the IAEA and Vienna group as part of this process, something that will please both Turkey and Brazil as they want the process to move forward.
Iran has warned against any additional sanctions on the Islamic Republic over its nuclear energy program.
Well, the warning comes just a day before the European Union is set to impose unilateral sanctions on Tehran.
Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has warned that countries supporting what he calls U.S. plots against Iran will be considered as hostile.
هر کس در این سناریویی که آمریکا نوشته برای جفسازی تبلیغاتی علیه ایران شرکت بکند ما عمل اون رو به عنوان دشمنی تلقی میکنیم و پاسخش رو قاطع خواهیم داد.
He says US-backed sanctions against Iran shows the West is worried about the country's progress. EU foreign ministers meet in Brussels on Monday to approve an additional package of sanctions against Iran. The new measures will target the country's oil and gas industry.
Hi everyone.
Iran has been under sanctions in the past few decades. The UN Security Council imposed a fourth set of sanctions on Tehran in early June. But EU leaders and the United States decided shortly afterwards to take unilateral action against Tehran. Washington and its allies say Iran might intend to develop nuclear weapons in the future. So they say tougher sanctions are needed to prevent it from getting nukes. Iran says nuclear arms have no place in its defense doctrine, and it asks why it should be singled out while the nuclear-armed Israel and the U.S., whose atomic weapons stockpiles pose a serious threat to world peace, do not come under the spotlight. Both the UN and unilateral EU and US sanctions come just after Iran, in a confidence-building measure, agreed to an enriched uranium swap declaration 2 months ago. Under the declaration, also signed by Brazil and Turkey, Iran agreed to swap its low-enriched uranium with nuclear fuel in Turkey. Tehran needs the fuel for its medical research reactor that produces radioisotopes for cancer treatment. Iran has attained remarkable success in aerospace, nuclear energy, medical and industrial fields, despite decades of sanctions. Tehran says it will continue to develop its industries and will turn sanctions into opportunities.
In other news, two U.S. drone attacks have left at least 8 people dead in Pakistan's northwestern tribal region. Officials say at least 4 people were killed and 2 others wounded in the latest attack on Dargah Mandi village in North Waziristan. In an earlier attack, U.S. drones fired 2 missiles at a compound in South Waziristan, killing 4 others. U.S. drones have targeted the region several times over the past 2 days. The U.S. has carried out numerous such attacks on Pakistan's tribal areas, killing about 1,000 people, mostly civilians, over the past 2 years. Now, Washington claims the strikes target militants. Islamabad has repeatedly condemned the attacks, saying they violate Pakistan's sovereignty.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has called on the Lebanese government to form a fact-finding committee to investigate the allegations made by a number of false witnesses in the special tribunal for the Hariri case. Press TV's Mariam Saleh reports.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah spoke for the 3rd time in 10 days and seemed adamant to protect what he described the victories of the resistance. Nasrallah chose the ceremony honoring the children of Hezbollah's martyrs to say that the achievements made by the resistance had taken Lebanon to a new regional status. He said that the U.S. and Israel had tried to alter his status by targeting Hezbollah's image, and that these attempts continue today through the special tribunal into the assassination of former Lebanese Premier
Not $500 million were spent for 28 years. Hundreds of millions of dollars were spent to tarnish the image of this resistance. They want to speak about the International Tribunal into the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. They want to take advantage of this sympathetic humanitarian cause which all Lebanese agree to.
On the issue of the tribunal, Sayed Nasrallah advocated the importance of justice and suggested a Lebanese committee to investigate the issue of false witnesses, which he said had misled the investigation for 4 years.
Let's put together a Lebanese committee, a parliamentary committee, or a judicial committee, or a ministerial committee, or a security committee, or a mixed committee. Let's put together a committee which brings these false witnesses, 3 plus 1, who is Muhammad Zuhair al-Sadiq. Let them go and get Sadiq wherever he is, and they know where he is because they transported him. They're paying for his protection. They're paying for his residence outside. Let this committee sit down with these false witnesses, ask them questions. Who taught you? Who fabricated you?
Nasrallah's words again expressed grave doubt about the real purpose behind the International Tribunal for the murder of Rafiq Hariri. However, in a recent speech, Saad Hariri once again committed himself to the March 14th Alliance, an alliance founded on enmity to Syria, which still maintains the International Tribunal is the best way to achieve justice.
It is important to find the solution. Everyone backs Hariri's special tribunal. However, the tribunal shouldn't make mistakes in getting the facts, as this could create political crisis in Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader ended his speech by issuing a grave warning once again that Hezbollah would not even put up with talk of any involvement by its members in the assassination of Lebanon's former premier. Only time can tell what scenario could take place in Lebanon after the decision of the special tribunal is released. But what is clear now is that Hezbollah will refuse any accusation that touches its resistance, which it considers noble and prideful, and has once more called on the prosecutor of the tribunal to go behind those responsible for the false witnesses and find the true culprit. Mariam Saleh, Press TV, Beirut.
You're watching World News here on Press TV. So for a quick check of the headlines this hour. The U.S. government says the oil giant BP chief executive will be replaced over the Gulf of Mexico slick. Iran says it's ready for technical talks on swapping its low-enriched uranium for nuclear fuel. And another U.S. drone strike on Pakistan's tribal area. Several people died in the attack.
State and Press TV still to come. Traditional clothes in Iraq's Kurdistan. The details just ahead.
Parliament as well, and President has cancelled a trip to Cuba, citing the danger of armed aggression by Colombia. Hugo Chavez says he has intelligence that the possibility of an armed aggression against Venezuela from Colombia is higher than it has been in 100 years. Chavez also says Venezuela is ready to repel any aggression. Venezuela has broken off diplomatic ties with Colombia after Bogota accused Caracas of serving as a rear base for Colombian rebels. Chavez has threatened to cut oil supplies to the United States in case of a military attack from Colombia. The U.S. has thrown its support behind Colombia amid escalating tensions between the South American neighbors.
Militants from a group calling itself Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb say they have killed a French national held hostage since April. The militants say they killed Michel Germanou in response to a raid by France and Mauritania against the group. Mauritanian troops backed by French special forces launched an attack on the group's bases in Mali over the weekend in an attempt to free Germanou. Paris says it cannot yet confirm that the hostage had in fact been killed.
The Taliban say they've killed 5 American forces in eastern Afghanistan, where search operations are underway for 2 missing U.S. soldiers. Taliban militants say they ambushed a U.S. tank in Logar province, killing 5 Americans and injuring 2 others. The tank was reportedly searching for the 2 U.S. servicemen who went missing in the province on Friday. Afghan officials say one of the 2 missing soldiers has been killed and the other is wounded. The Taliban claim they killed one of the soldiers and captured the other one alive. The group had earlier denied involvement in their disappearance.
Afghan officials are investigating reports that as many as 45 civilians were killed in a NATO airstrike in the south of the country. The late Friday raid reportedly took place in the town of Sangin in Helmand province. Witnesses say helicopters had circled over the area before the strikes. NATO, however, says its initial investigation has found no evidence of civilian casualties. U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan regularly launch attacks on alleged militant hideouts, but the strikes usually result in civilian casualties.
At least 3 people have been killed and over 20 others injured in a series of bomb attacks in the Iraqi capital Baghdad and northern city of Mosul. Interior Ministry officials said 2 of the dead are policemen and 1 civilian. One security official said 1 police officer was killed and 3 of his colleagues were wounded by a roadside bomb in the south of Baghdad on Sunday. In West Baghdad, 2 roadside explosions left 14 people, including 8 policemen, wounded. In Mosul, another roadside bomb took the life of 1 policeman and wounded another security officer and a child.
And in Iraqi Kurdistan, while most wear Western-style clothes imported from foreign countries, traditional attire remains popular and an ancient handicraft lives on.
When Marco Polo travelled through Iraqi Kurdistan in the 13th century, he spoke of a bustling textile industry and referred to the inhabitants as manufacturers and traders. Modern technologies and ways of production have rendered most of these crafts extinct, but there are still some people who produce clothes and shoes in the traditional way. Kurdish clothing was officially forbidden under Saddam Hussein's rule, but the tradition was kept alive, and those in the remote Kurdish mountains never stopped wearing their traditional attire.
Our sense of patriotism made us keep our traditional clothes. Even during Saddam's regime, people were asking me for Kurdish.
With the toppling of Saddam in 2003, the Kurdistan region became open to foreign trade and investment. As a result, very few Kurds engage in traditional labor such as agriculture and textiles. Income has risen sharply, and most people work in towns and cities, many wearing Western-style clothes. Nevertheless, there is still a strong demand for Kurdish clothing, including the famous shoes known locally as klash. They are made of a mixture of cotton and animal hide, and their construction is a lengthy and costly process.
A pair of klash costs almost $50. It is more expensive than typical shoes in the market, but klash has better quality because it is handmade and is more comfortable to wear, especially in the summer.
This industry comprises only a very tiny percentage of the overall Iraqi Kurdish economy.
and there are so far no government initiatives to support it. These craftsmen are holding out against the influx of poor quality goods made hurriedly for quick sale, coming mostly from China.
Many older men still wear the full Kurdish attire, even in the cities. And on formal occasions, such as weddings and graduation ceremonies, everybody attends in such attire. Thankfully, this is one centuries-old tradition that doesn't look like dying out anytime soon. Matt Frey.